Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, November 19th, 2014. And with me today, I have my troubleshooters extraordinaire, Kelly Gumont. How are you, Kelly?
I'm well, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing all right, despite the fact that today seems to be Technology Hates Jeff Day, but that's okay.
I think it's Techno Fail Wednesday on a number of fronts.
Oh, so. Boy, howdy. Yeah.
That's a bummer.
It is, but I have enough of a system working right now that we can actually record a show because that's all that really matters.
Let's not talk about it too much or we'll jinx it.
Yeah, that would be really bad. And that wonderful laugh was John Martellaro. How are you, John?
Hi, good morning. I'm having tech issues too. So I'm on my iPad Air this morning. That's why I sound funny.
Yes, I feel your pain. I have one computer that this morning decided it did not have a formatted hard drive anymore. And I'm having audio recording issues on my podcasting computer, but it's okay because I'm making it all work anyhow. And now you're having Skype issues. I have friends that would be very adamant to tell me that Mercury is in retrograde right now. Whether it actually is or not, I don't know. But it's a weird tech day.
Odds are good. And, you know, when it comes to technology, retrograde Mercury is as likely an explanation as anything else, to be completely honest.
Yeah, works for me.
So let's talk a little bit about what happened with your machine. Maybe this is something that will be useful for some and a cautionary tale for others.
Sure. All right. Well, I'll do it real quick because we have some topics that I want to make sure that we can get to as well. So the deal is that when I sat down at my computer this morning, it woke up and it appeared to be just fine. And then I suddenly had the spinning beach ball of death in Safari, which happens every now and then. And I click on the Finder, and suddenly I get the spinning beach ball of death there. Eventually, I just had to force my computer to reboot. And when it did, I had the flashing question mark folder. And so running through all the usual tests and troubleshooting routines, I eventually ended up at doing Command R to boot, so it took me to recovery mode. And instead of finding the partition on my hard drive, it had to go to internet recovery, which was a bad sign.
Oh, dear.
And Disk Utility says that I have an unformatted hard drive. Now, the only thing that has changed since this happened is that I did install iOS 10.1, so Yosemite 10.10.1. I'm not saying Yosemite is the culprit in this case. I'm just saying that's the only thing that has changed in my system since it was working and then now not. So the big thing out of this is that it looks like I'm just going to have to reform my hard drive and start over. But I back up religiously. So while this is a pain in the butt for me, I do have my backups. And that's all it is a pain in the butt. This is not a catastrophe because I won't have lost any data.
Here's your chance to replace it with an SSD.
Except I don't want to spend money on another hard drive. The hard drive that's in here is just about a year old, and I bought a really nice terabyte hard drive for this laptop. So
I'm so done with spinning disks. So done.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking my next SSD will be in the Retina MacBook Pro, where I have a 500 gig drive, and I'll take that up to a terabyte. And then at that point, maybe I can turn that into my primary computer. Anyhow, so make sure you have backups, people, because you never know when something as random as what I just experienced will happen to you.
Right.
And if you don't have your data backed up, you're just out of luck.
Exactly.
Okay. So with that PSA out of the way, the first real topic I wanted to take a look at, this stems from all of the craziness surrounding Uber right now, which is I'll call it the taxi-like company. Okay, so what happened was an Uber executive made a comment about essentially doxing journalists. And by that, mm-hmm. I mean looking up all the details they can find about someone and then posting them online in an effort to ruin their lives.
Mm-hmm. And what he specifically called out as an attractive way to do this was if somebody was giving them negative press, going and digging up information. And I believe what he said was talking about paying someone to do the research and being able to use that information against a journalist who is going to try to give the company coverage that it doesn't necessarily like.
And while that's just a horrible thing to say and do, and very unprofessional as well, the bigger picture out of this is that there are companies that have all kinds of information on us. And in the case of Uber, they have personal information. They know where we live. They know our credit cards. They know our travel activities because right. that's part of what Uber is for. Mm-hmm. So how safe should we feel as consumers using services that have this much information on us? And I actually don't have a good answer for that, so I'm tossing it over to you guys.
Kelly, your turn.
Well, I think it's really important to understand the privacy policy and the terms of service, because no matter what it is, even if it's iTunes, because there's a certain amount of agreement there, and whatever is in that, you're agreeing to it. So you should at least be able to scan through and perhaps pick out some troubling words or some things that might be concerning to you. I was never a person that put a lot of stuff on Facebook. And then there was the whole thing with the Facebook policy about how Facebook could use your pictures for whatever they wanted, even after you delete your account. So I don't put pictures on Facebook. So if you ever look at things on Facebook and notice that there's someone there who isn't using a picture of themselves or their children as their Facebook picture, that would be me. Because I don't want to give it to them knowing that that was initially what they wanted to do with the photo I was going to upload. So I didn't do it. There's a certain amount of, this is the information we have. This is how we store it. And this is what we do with it. And most of the time, there will be within that document something about what happens if you delete your account. What happens to that data? And you want to make sure that data is not continuing to be preserved. You want to make sure, you know, if you are somebody who tried to delete your account with Uber, and remember, you do have to give them a separate support request. You have to send them an email and tell them that you want to delete your account. And I think as part of the form that you fill out that turns into the email that they receive, you have to tell them why. So when you do that, you want to make sure that the information that they have is not preserved, so that if somebody were to say Uber suffered a data breach, then even if your account was deleted, if all of your payment information is still in there, you may still get caught as a victim of this data breach, even though you're technically not their customer anymore.
Well, Kelly, so there's a problem with that. You first of all, you have to take the time to read the agreement with all the fine print, pages and pages, and then you have to look for areas that are hot areas, and you may not even have the technical expertise to mm-hmm. interpret where the devious and the difficult areas are in the user agreement.
Right, I don't. And yes. I mean, I do sit and I do look through them, and I look through them specifically for what they're doing with my data, and if it's outlined, how they store it, and what happens to it if I delete my account. Those are the things I'm always looking for. And then if I see other things about property of Facebook or things, you know, property of the company, that's where I start reading a little deeper and start looking for what that really means.
Now, do you guys remember, I think it was a couple years ago, and I believe it was on April Fool's Day, there was a software company that added in to their Terms of Service Licensing Agreement a line that said that they now owned our souls.
Oh, yeah.
And they did it as a joke to see if mm-hmm. see if people caught it. And eventually some people did. And then, of course, they issued a press release saying, hey, good news, we have changed our terms of service. You get to keep your soul.
Yeah, which made everybody go.
I thought it was a very clever, funny joke, but I also thought it made a very important point about just how little we pay attention to the terms of service. And in this case, it was a joke about keeping our souls. But if you're not paying attention really to and of course, this is a very difficult thing to do, to exactly what companies are doing with your personal data, you don't know. Mm-hmm. And so Uber is a perfect example. If you choose to cancel your Uber account, none of that data goes away until you send them a specific request asking them to make it go away.
Right.
You know, Kelly, you take a different approach than I do, or maybe not. I tend to look at a sort of a profile of my activities and what I really need. And I take a very conservative approach in that I don't sign up for things unless I come to the conclusion that they're just essential for my life. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of things that people throw out there in the press release, and it looks like some cool, really, really cool service or a really cool app or something, and you know people jump all over it and sign up and because it looks cool, but they haven't really established that they're going to be using it consistently. It's going to be an essential part of their life. My idea is generally to sit and wait and see if they're still around, you know, after a year, and whether I really need, really, really need, you know, that service. And that keeps me in kind of a low profile mode and keeps me from overextending and sending out information.
And that's also a
smart approach.
Yeah, it's a really smart approach. For some people, that's not practical. So if you aren't in a position where you can hold off on using a specific service, then pay attention to what's being done with your information.
Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be nice, Jeff, if somebody like the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, or some other group, read through all these service agreements and rated them, looked for keywords, because you develop an experience curve, and you learn to recognize certain key issues and grade these service agreements. Wouldn't that be cool?
There is a site that tracks the changes. So, like when privacy policies get updated and things like that. There is a site that does that I'm sorry, I don't remember what the name of it is, but there is a site that tracks the changes. Like, you know, a week ago it was this and now they've changed this to that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they usually do a little bit of explanation on what it means. And unfortunately I don't remember what the site is. If I do, I'll make sure we include it in the show notes.
And then we'd need to tie that to an intelligent agent like Cortana or Siri, who, you know, when you sit down at your computer in the morning, wakes up and says, "Hey, John, did you know that your license agreement with so-and-so has changed? Or your terms of service agreement has changed. And here's the interesting part of it, according to, you know, this website." And you go, while you're sipping your tea, you go, "Oh, that's interesting. Thank you."
Well, okay, now I'm picturing a system where all that stuff's being logged and tracked, feeds into an if this, then that recipe, and I'm getting a notifications when critical changes are happening.
Yeah, with a knowledge navigator like interface, who can figure out what's important and not nag you. Yes, I have a sci-fi vision of the future where that's all straightened out like that. That's a nice sequence.
That would be a beautiful thing. Hey, yes. we are almost out of time, and I wanted to hit the other topic that I had on my mind. But real quick. Kelly had mentioned we'll try and find the link to that website and put it in the show notes. Mm-hmm. If you're like, "Show notes, where do I find show notes?" When you find the article that I write every day to go along with the podcast, which it'll show up right on the Mac Observer homepage. Click on that article, because in that article I will list all of our topics that we discussed on the show. And if there are articles that relate to whatever it is that we've discussed, I'll have links in there as well. So that's where you will find the show notes. And real quick, the other thing that I wanted to take a look at, Apple did a press release yesterday for the beta version of the software development kit for Apple Watch apps.
Yeah.
And on one hand, great, because now we all know about this beta software being out there for developers. But I'm wondering if this was really a press release to let developers know, because there are other channels where developers could have been notified, or if this is more a thing to help drive interest and hype around Apple Watch.
I think you're right. Because Apple does that from time to time. Get the radar lit up. Yeah.
Yeah, and okay, so I'm thinking this because first, Apple Watch doesn't ship until spring of 2015. We won't have native app support on the watch until later in the year. So what we'll have access to when Apple Watch ships will be like extensions of apps on our iPhone. So it will be somewhat limited, but Apple's making a big deal out of this. So
it's very off to me, and I think it's because the bar for what warrants a press release from Apple usually is a lot higher than this. I don't remember there being a press release about the beta version of Yosemite, like, as a big deal, and a bunch of people talking about how excited they were to be developing for 10.10. I don't remember that being a thing. You know, there's usually a press release after an event or for an earnings call, but aside from that, it's very rare. I mean, we've had entirely new updates to hardware in the Apple Store that didn't get a press release.
Yeah, but this is a new product, Kelly, that hasn't shipped yet, and maybe Apple was sensing that there wasn't enough developer interest and they wanted to sort of get the fires going.
Well, if they wanted people to be that excited, they shouldn't have announced it in September and said it's coming someday.
Well, that goes back to my theory about GTAT and the Sapphire. Now, I know Brian disagrees with me.
I totally agree with you that if GTAT hadn't been the tragedy that it has apparently become.
I think that had something to do with pushing back the date on the Apple Watch for the Sapphire displays. In some way we don't understand yet. Because, you know, if GTAT was fired up to do 10 million displays for iPhone 6s, then there's certainly enough Sapphire to do Apple Watches, and that's Brian's point. But you never know the full story, and there could be configuration issues. You know, maybe all the Sapphire was tied up in iPhone displays, and now they need to reconfigure to, you know, build that special little crystal for the iWatch.
And yeah, I'm sure there's some more to the story.
Retooling, So given that that kind of drifted out in time, maybe they thought that they needed something to sort of, you know, light up our radars again.
Yeah, it just seems weird to me that it would be a beta, and that it's a beta that won't even let you build a native app. And, like, there's just a bunch of stuff about this that makes me wonder why it warranted a press release and not a big deal announcement, or maybe something less formal than a full-on press release, and maybe they send it to they send an announcement to The Loop and us and iMore, and, you know, strategically, like, go inform some people who then can go light up the rest of the internet with what they're up to. So it was the thing, I think, to me that was so weird about it was how cheerleadery it was, because, like, there's quotes from developers about how excited they are, you know, whatever the airline was about, like, I'm really excited that my watch will tell me when my gate changes or how late my flight's going to be. Like, it was weird all the way around to me.
Yeah, it was an odd thing. But the upside is that developers are already working on their companion apps for the Apple Watch. And so that tells me by the time Apple Watch actually ships, there should be a nice collection of add-ons for us to use, which tells me that it was actually really smart that Apple did the press release yesterday, because now, look, people are talking about Apple Watch even more. So
that's true.
Their master plan is clearly working, because here we are today.
Are you guys going to buy one?
Yes, I'll be buying one, because if for no other reason, I want it so that I actually have a smartwatch and something that we can review.
I'll be agonizing over whether I can afford a Sapphire display.
Yeah, I'll be debating that one too. Yeah. So, hey, we are out of time.
Oh, no.
I know. Well, we could go on for hours if we wanted, but we are out of time. So, Kelly, thank you so much for joining me today.
Surely.
And John, thank you for joining me as well. It's always great having both of you on the show.
Certainly.
And we will see everyone tomorrow.
Cheers.
Bye.